Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Tonight we're investigating how to behave in the modern workplace, from the introvert to the extrovert. How can we all get on at work without causing each other distress? What's appropriate in 2019? And the big one, how do you talk to your boss? Do you need to manage upward? Perhaps you have a fantastic boss who you can speak to with ease. What if you love telling jokes? Is it okay to carry on that way at work? There are people who believe these days, and maybe with some reason, that you really have to very much mind your P's and Q's at work these days. Do you have to do that more than you used to? And what if you're a very shy person, but brilliant at your job? How do you get by? Love to talk with you. 1-300-800-222. Organisational psychologist Jim Bright is my guest tonight, and he's in the studio with us. Jim, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Some people do think that these days. You can't say anything.
Yeah,
is that fear? Is that justified, do you think?
I think it's probably a bit overblown, but I mean, it reminds me of that story of Peter Ustinov turning up at that party in Hollywood, and he walks in and he said, "Oh, look, there's Charles Laughton standing there waiting to be offended." And there are some people in the workplace who are just on the lookout to take offence at absolutely anything.
Do you think it's worse now than it used to be?
I think we're probably aware of things now that were commonplace in the workplace. If you go back, if you think about things like those old English carry-on movies in the 70s and the 60s and the sort of behaviour and the leching and the sort of sexism that went on.
Exactly.
If anyone tried to carry on like Sid James today, you'd be out on your ear pretty quickly, and quite rightly so. So I think, yes, there's been an increasing awareness. And I think other things, more seriously, such as Me Too and awareness around things like sexual harassment has created an environment where people have to be a lot more self-censorious of their behaviour.
Yeah, I guess so. Grotesque behaviour, but I'm just wondering whether those more egregious examples of sexism, racism, and so on, which no one thinks ought to be permitted anyway, and never should have been, but has that resulted in a new reticence at work where people really go to work, don't say anything, do their job and go home?
No, I don't think so at all. I think people are still cracking jokes all over the place. In fact, I was talking to a colleague recently, and he was sort of saying to me, I push it a bit, but I'm very careful who I do it with, and I make absolutely sure these are people who perhaps I socialise with outside of work or what have you. So, there's still a lot of banter that goes on, and I think that's a really important thing. I think if you're going to turn it into this sort of solemn place where, nose down, sort of bum in the air, sort of Dickensian office or something, and then people go home, it completely ignores the fact that people go to work for social reasons. They don't just go to work to make money. They go to work to form friendships, to form bonds.
But are people a bit more afraid these days?
Yeah, I think they're...
I mean, a bit more apprehensive, a bit more sort of on their guard.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think if you're sensible, you're on your guard. And it's a case of understanding and trying to understand where the other person's coming from. So if the person, if you're new in the office or the other person is new in the office, cracking a particular kind of joke is a dangerous thing to do. I think it's a bit like cat lovers and dog lovers. There's people who find jokes with the sexual content very funny, and others who find them extremely smutty, and other people who are 12-year-old boys and like lavatorial jokes, and other people think that's absolutely appalling. And it's sort of, never the twain shall meet. So it's almost a case of working out your audience before you start jumping in. It's the same with things like politics and religion, for that matter, as well. I mean, it's a bit like going to a dinner party. I mean, you start opining on these things before you've got a sense of who you're talking to.
I think we've all had that experience, haven't we, of embarking on an anecdote or a joke. And halfway through it, we suddenly realise...
this is the wrong audience.
This is not the audience for this, but you feel compelled to get to the end of it, and you feel very much on your own by the time you've done, because you know that people are taking you down everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think, hopefully those experiences don't happen too often. But yes, you do have to be careful. And you've also got to be careful if you start to misread the signals, if you start to get overexcited and you think you've got this wonderful audience and you misinterpret somebody's sort of rictus fixed smile on their face for the fact they're absolutely enjoying this rather than the fact that, you know, they can't get out of the room fast enough. And again, this is the sort of thing you sometimes hear, that one party in sort of complaints will say, oh, but, you know, he or she was enjoying what I was saying and it was just jolly banter, it was all a big joke. And the other one's saying, you know, I was offended and, you know, I was clearly upset, but I couldn't leave the room because they're my superior. So a lot of it is about almost having a kind of out-of-body experience and trying to look at it from the perspective of other people in the room. How is this likely to come across? And, of course, you know what this is like when you've got good mates, old friends. Hmm. You know instinctively how things are going to come across, and you know the buttons that you can press and how far you can take particular topics and which ones to avoid because, you know, they'll get on a high horse or they'll get offended or what have you. So it's a bit about that. It's about developing a friendship, as you would with any person. Is you don't just go out there and impose yourself and say, this is my sense of humour, like it or put up with it. Mm. Because that's the sort of, you know, that is inappropriate behaviour for anybody in developing a friendship or developing a professional relationship with someone.
What do you think are good interpersonal skills? Are they important? I mean, that's silly. Of course they're important. I mean, interpersonal skills are important for all of us. But are interpersonal skills at work different from interpersonal skills, say, with your friends or the community generally?
I think it depends on the person. I think for some people, they're able to behave in exactly the same quite naturalistic way. Hmm. Across the board. There are people who have a natural sense of charisma. People are drawn to them. I've never met the man, but I was, you know, I've heard many, many stories that Bill Clinton used to ooze this, or Obama oozed this kind of personal charisma, and people were just drawn to them for some reason, and therefore much more amenable to them right from the beginning. Whereas I think, by contrast, I've been hearing the stories recently about Theresa May, apparently has a very, very awkward sort of social interaction with people, possibly because she's quite shy. So for some people, it's almost a case of adopting a persona. And putting a lot of energy into being approachable or approaching other people, which they don't find easy, they don't find it straightforward. And for other people, they're kind of blessed with this kind of sunny disposition and this kind of engaging personality that just draws people towards them. Mm. We differ in so many different ways, each and every one of us. And, you know, if you've got that, that's fantastic. If you haven't got that, then you need to work on it. And it may well be that the way you sort of behave or perform at work is quite different to the way that you perform at home.
Yeah, I mean, putting it simply, do we behave more formally at work?
I think it depends on the workplace, and it depends on who you're talking to. The conversations you're going to have with your boss are going to be very different, probably, the conversations you're going to have with your work colleagues. Mm. Conversation with the boss is usually muffled because they can't hear you through the carpet that you've sort of got your face buried into and their feet. But you are, generally speaking, going to be speaking a bit more cautiously and a bit more respectfully, probably, to a senior manager or to possibly to an important client or stakeholder than you would do to the person who, you know, sees you every day, sees you swearing when you spilt the coffee over your stuff and, you know, rocked up late because you got stuck in traffic and all of those other human things that happen to people. Mm.
I'm talking with organisational psychologist Jim Bright. We're talking about workplace behaviour and interpersonal skills in the workplace. And in these days when some people think you can't say anything and you've got to be on your toes and on your guard the whole time. You think that's right, don't you? You think you need to be on your guard. What do you mean by that?
I think you've got to be wary. Yeah, I think on your guard is possibly a bit too strong, but you've got to be, anyone who's sensible is going to be wary until you've worked out what you're dealing with. Mm. So, I mean, I suppose it's a bit dramatic sort of metaphor, but think of it as a minefield. You've got to kind of work out the territory and know where the explosives are, what the topics are that you can and can't talk about. Mm. So, you know, if you march into a new workplace and you start opining, and you might suddenly find you've hit some issue that people have been kind of niggling on and has divided people absolutely down the middle for years and years and years. I mean, it's like going to Britain and talking about Brexit. you're about to offend somebody really quickly.
That's a good example, actually. That's right. I mean, I don't live there. I don't know. I don't know what the circuit. But, you know, I'm interested in it. Of course, as a person who's interested in what's going on in the world, is that the kind of topic, for example, at in Britain where you'd be careful about what you said?
You'd have to be very, yeah, exactly, because, you know, you look at the opinion polls, it's about 50-50, roughly. You're going to, you know, you don't know whether you're dealing with, you know, a sort of absolutely rabid Brexiteer.
So are we stuck on the weather as the only topic that's really safe?
Well, I don't know, because I think some people blame the sort of the Europeans for the weather as well. So I think it goes in both directions. But you do. I mean, you start off with fairly bland conversations before you know the situation you're in. People who don't do that, usually people have got a lot of situational power. So if you're going in as the boss, then you probably can set the agenda in terms of what you're going to say. But again, you go too far, then, you know, you're likely to end up copping a lot of problems these days and complaints. But within normal, you know, realms of conversation, yeah, I mean, you talk about what, you know, what happened at the weekend, you know, sport or the film you've gone to see or something like that. Those sorts of rather bland things, or chatting about sort of, you know, the kids getting the homework done or doing the garden, or, I mean, it sounds very dull, doesn't it, the way I'm talking about?
It's going to sound just nodding off here.
That's right, precisely. But do you know something? I mean, in a sense, to start with, if you come across as slightly dull or boring, that's probably a lot better than coming across as highly opinionated and offensive and divisive. So you just have to sort of, you know, ease your way. It's like a sort of cat finding a sort of way around a new environment. You sort of, you know, just sort of stroke around the legs of people a bit and sort of.
Some of this behaviour, Jim, I think, has got to do with generational issues too, hasn't it? You know, old farts around the office or around the workplace, you know, in the yard, on the job, aren't tolerated by young people in the same way. And for that matter, the humour of older people from previous generations may be quite different from the humour of younger people, and vice versa. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, I'm lucky because I come from a generation which was, I think, peak humour. That me and my generation are the funniest people have ever been on the planet, and everyone else is, yeah, absolutely. And all of the shows were funnier.
I'm a bit worried about you, but I mean,
that's right. So, you know, and I am getting to that stage in life where I'm having to explain who Monty Python is, and that's worrying me in profoundly.
But very young people wouldn't know what you're talking about.
Well, they will do by the time I finish with them, I can tell you.
Yeah, but here you go, T.J. Yeah. You're boring them rigid. You know,
boring them, yes, precisely.
Whatever you do in the office, avoid Jim, because he'll go start banging on and on and on about these old Monty Python things which no one cares about.
I know, and I think that's the thing. You've got to, you know, learn as much from the people you're around. I mean, you know, it's the same for every generation that goes through, that they, you know, they have their own tropes, their own cultural reference points and so forth. Some of those which are deliberately kept to themselves, so it becomes a way of identifying themselves in groups and out groups and that kind of stuff. Nothing worse than the office party with the kind of late middle-aged manager desperately trying to sort of dance or pretend he knows something about young people's music. I mean, it's just sad. But, you know, there is middle ground with all of this stuff. And again, if you're too exclusive, if you create these little coteries of, oh, you're too young, you wouldn't know what we're talking about, that's just as offensive as people, you know, as a younger group sort of trying to cut other people out. So it's a case of tolerance as well. I mean, you know, this word tolerance isn't used enough. That people are too sort of well-versed in complaints procedures and sort of putting people on report and all that sort of ghastliness. And in fact, I'm actually quite cynical about these things. I think organisations have got these very elaborate sort of human resource policies often can be used by scheming people to hide behind them, to sort of manipulate and to bully people in various different ways. So a lot of it comes down to common sense. It comes down to being tolerant of other people. Say, okay, well, yeah, let them talk about this stuff. I may not be particularly interested, or I don't particularly know what they're talking about, but, you know, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll show some interest in them. I'll ask them some questions, you know?
1-300-800-222 is my number. See, here it goes. I take offence to that. Monty Python's extremely important, says my text. I know it is.
I agree.
We agree. But there are people who would not agree. I suppose that's the issue. What about? Look, here's another one. In previous generations, touching people at the workplace, like slapping them on the back, putting your arm around them, saying "great job." I'm not talking about sexual touching. I'm just talking about, you know, putting your arm around someone and saying "fantastic report," or you know, that would you just I've just had a word from the client, that was really great work, you know, giving them a slap on the back or whatever. Mm. That was very common in a previous generation. It's probably not as tolerated now, is it?
I don't think it is at all. I was thinking, I was at one of these sort of corporate lunches a couple of years ago, and I had Peter Fitzsimons next to me, and this corporate speaker said, now everyone reach out and hold the hand of the person next to you. And Peter looked at me and I looked at Peter. We're not going to be holding hands in public. So we grabbed each other's jackets and that was as far as we went before both of us independently walked out on this thing. Yeah. So some people are into sort of hugging. I mean, for me, I'm renowned at conferences for running a mile from the huggers. Hmm. I don't particularly like that sort of thing. I suppose it's a standoff
English.
Well,
I think
a lot of
people don't like it, actually. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's probably always the case that only some people like this.
Mm.
Is it better these days to, like, just to say that's not a thing you do at work anymore?
I think to start with, and I think you can, again, it's a case you can build up trust that some people might actually like it and want to be hugged. But and if you don't know, don't impose this on other people. And the same thing with, you know, things like touching people on the shoulder or, you know, on the back or something like that. Mm. It might be, as you say, completely innocent. It might be completely fraternal. Yet, if that's
I'm not talking about sleazy touching. I mean, sleazy touching was never acceptable.
No, I'm not going.
We're talking about that kind of.
But even a hand on a shoulder,
that camaraderie type of touching, which a lot of people don't like that either, do they?
No, I mean, I've been very critical sometimes of these sort of bonding training courses where people are being sort of, you know, forced up the sides of ropes and things like that, which ultimately ends up with people being touched in parts of their bodies where they wouldn't expect that as part of their pay scale. I mean, it's not an appropriate thing, and I've always felt that's been an intrusive kind of thing. And again, I think what you have to do in all of these situations is you have to question yourself and say, okay, as you pointed out, just because I like Monty Python doesn't mean other people are going to agree with me. Just because I like a hug doesn't mean other people are going to want a hug. And it's and that is really just a case of, again, trying to get out of yourself a bit and look at it from an alternative perspective. And so much in terms of problems in communication in the workplace is that we get stuck in our own perspective, and then if we get pushed back, we get some negativity, we then get into defensive mode, and then we start defending what we're doing. So I'll immediately start jumping in and start quoting at length Monty Python sketches to prove my point that they are the funniest things ever.
Here he goes again.
And it doesn't get anywhere in terms of the communication, and it does nothing to persuade the other person. So I think that those sorts of things you have to be very, very, very careful about.
Yeah. Dude, Michael's been waiting on there. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hello. One of my senior nurses when I was nursing paid me the great compliment of saying I was the most non-racist and non-sexist Australian she had come across. Now, whilst I was studying nursing at university, it was drummed into us, and it was aimed at males, not to use expressions like dolls or lovey.
Yeah.
But yet I hear females doing it all the time, getting away with it, and nobody corrects them because I'm not your lovey and I'm not your dolls.
Yeah, you mean women would do it to you or do it to men?
I wouldn't do it to them, and I don't expect them to do it to me.
Mm. Yeah, that's an...
It's not only in the nursing profession, although now I'm retired, but it's also even at the supermarket. Are you right, lovey? Are you right, dolls? And think, don't call me lovey or dolls because I'm not your lovey and I'm not your doll.
Well, okay, Michael, we've got the point. What do you think here, Jim? The use of language, of course, is always important, isn't it?
In terms
of affection?
It is.
And keep it straight?
And people get very, very upset about this. My column last week was arguing that we need to get away from Mr. and Miss as terms of address in schools, and I don't think I've had such an abusive mailbag in a long time. People do get very particular about this, and they want to be told in a certain way. The trouble is for men using terms like love is it's so attached to that sort of patriarchal patronising, sexist sorts of behaviour, dismissive of their female colleagues, that it's completely understandable why there'd be some sensitivities around that. And clearly, you know, a caller there is equally sort of uncomfortable with people using these overly familiar terms in return. Again, I would say start off cautiously. And then don't say, this is what I'm like, I'm just very affectionate. Because, no, what you're saying then is, this is me, accept me as and accommodate me and work around me. And that's never going to be successful.
Because it's basically selfish.
It is. It's basically absolutely selfish. So, you know, some people will like it, and then you use those terms. It'll be a very effective way of dealing with people. But, you know, other people have to understand. Other people have different views on this.
Texts in, no one ever liked the Benny Hill banter in The Office in the 70s. No women ever thought a slap on the bum by a sleazy colleague was funny. No European immigrant probably ever thought Dago or Wog was funny in the workplace. And pretty sure the gay bloke never really appreciated the camp jokes either. We never liked it then, but now we've got the strength to speak up. I love my workplace. It's fun and without disrespectful humour. No one's on their guard. Males and females mix all the time. It's really not that difficult. We talk religion, sex and politics. Not a problem.
Yep.
Yeah, probably fair enough observation.
Absolutely fair enough.
Fair enough observation. That is, in other words, we can. I suppose this is what we're talking about. You know, we can go too far the other way, can't we? Pippa, hello.
Oh, hello. Hello, Philip and Jim. It just makes me laugh. We had medical parents, both of them, so we're quite used to their type of humour, but had to rush Granny in to the Epworth, and in emergency there, two doctors rushed up, and they said, Nina, you've got a sore toe. And, of course, it was black and rather oppressive. And I looked up into him, and I said, no, you must be Irish. Well, the whole room just burst out in laughter. He was Irish, but it was his approach, and Mum just burst out laughing too, which is marvellous. But, Jim, you don't know it, but the person you're sitting next to also has the intelligence and the awareness of his audience plus his position. And one night I remember listening in to, we have a quiz that Philip runs, and it was a particular character, I can't remember who, and they were trying to get Phil to give him or her a little clue, and Philip was not playing the game. And this person said, well, that's not fair. And then the person sitting next to you said, well, I'm a brute. Well, we just belly laughed. You see, this is what I call position knowing methods of handling. Now, that is an exceptional way of running any show.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, thanks, Pippa. 1-300-800-222 is my number if you'd like to call and join this conversation. Jim Bright's with us, organisational psychologist. What about this one, Jim? My texter says, it's a shame, really, all this talk about the language, because it's even affected our wonderful language. When was the last time you heard the lovely term Sheila?
John Thor's wife?
Yes. Yes. It is it's an old-fashioned Australian expression, isn't it? Is it best left in the in the pocket, do you think?
It's funny you should say that. I was actually considering replying to one of these abusive emails I got this week about sort of being too informal with teachers. And the person that addressed me all the way through is Jimmy. and then insisted on being addressed. And if you respond to me, you must respond like this. Yeah. And I did suddenly think, you know, should I start channeling Les Patterson? I thought, no, this is not going to be good for my career to do this. So resist the temptation. So yeah, consider Sheila for a microsecond, and then bury it back into the
into the
1950s.
It's not a goer. No.
I do not think it's a goer. And even that expression "goer" in the wrong context would also be inappropriate as well.
I guess that's right.
Outside of racing.
Bill in the ACT. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
Yeah, look, I just would like to... I'm a psychologist, albeit a forensic psychologist, not an organisational psychologist, but I suspect I'm a similar vintage to Jim, and I just wanted to pay credit to him if I could. It's so good and so refreshing to hear common sense come into psychology, Jim, and some pragmatism. You know, I work in a team where I'm probably three decades older than a lot of my colleagues, and and I sort of just followed along, you know, the lines of what you've said in terms of fitting in and just easing your way in and, you know, a bit like your cat sort of metaphor, just finding out the territory. And I just think, you know, sometimes I'm not trying to knock younger psychologists, but I think sometimes we overcook a lot of things and pragmatism gets and common sense gets kind of lost a little bit in how do we, you know, teach or encourage people to interact and engage and, you know, and socially connect. So I just found it really refreshing. I've just come back from work, you know, working all night as a psychologist. It was just great to, yeah, just to hear such a pragmatic, refreshing kind of perspective on things.
Yeah, sorry, Jim, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think Bill, it raises a good point. I mean, one of the things with people like psychologists in training and doctors and other people like that is they have it drilled into them, and quite rightly so, about appropriate boundaries, respecting boundaries and so forth. And what can happen afterwards with the newly trained people is that it's almost like interaction by numbers. So it's sort of look at the checkboard, smile, make eye contact, and we've all experienced that. And it's all very inauthentic, and I think that just comes with it a bit of experience and relaxing to the appropriate level. And then once you've got to that level, then you can be, you know, as Bill says, sort of more pragmatic about it.
Mary says, "What rubbish you're talking the ABC people are so easily offended these days. I love being called love or darl. It's just a friendly term of endearment." Well, Mary's quite right. It is. It is. I mean, love or darl is never meant as anything other than a friendly, informal term of endearment.
No, I don't agree with that. I think love is often used as an extremely patronising, belittling expression. It can also be used to be...
It can also just be...
absolutely, I agree.
A very friendly term of endearment.
Yeah, but it's not only that. So I'm going on both sides of the fence with this one, because I agree. And if a person actually wants to be called that... I was introduced to somebody in my gym at the weekend. We'd just been doing this treadmill challenge, and... we'd finished the whole thing, all very congratulating, having a beer, and this guy is about my age. He said, I'm known around here as Fossil. And I was thinking, okay. And then I was sort of waiting, and what's your name? And it was funny. I was uncomfortable because I didn't know him particularly well. I don't know him. And I thought, is that the term to use, or should I be using his name to start with before I kind of I get the privileges to get to the level where I can use his nickname? So, I mean, generally speaking, you know, if people should be known by what they want to be known by. And I think that's fine. But don't presume that the language that you use is going to be the language other people are going to find acceptable. And I know at times that's frustrating, and I know at times it may be the other person's being precious or is almost being manipulative. But again, it's back to that tolerance thing.
Yeah, there is tolerance, and then there is, I suppose, unreasonableness, isn't there? You know, tolerance taken to its extreme means no one really does do anything other than walk in, say hello, say good morning, and then just do their work. For fear of upsetting anybody. Do you think open plan workplaces make things worse? Was it better in days when people went to their own rooms?
I think having little closeted offices is a brilliant way of developing vicious office gossip and little coteries and people sort of ganging up. And I can remember when I first went to the workforce, and I'd walk into a room and there'd be sort of several sort of middle managers there, sort of my bosses, and it, you know, they all go silent, and then there'd be laughter when you walk out. You know, oh no, you know, what have I done, or what are they saying, or what have you. So it created that sort of environment. Having said that, I personally cannot stand working in open plan offices. I sort of have the Greta Garbo syndrome of just leave me alone. I just want to be in peace so I can actually do what I want to do. So I think it certainly stops the egregious behaviour. And, you know, that's one way of doing it. But I don't know whether it all the benefits are particularly good for that. If you've got to do stuff where you've got to concentrate.
My text says, I'm a nurse, busy as, and sometimes I just forget people's names. So I'm guilty of calling someone darling or a child little one. People don't like mate either. That's an interesting one. What about mate?
Well,
go, mate.
Yeah, mate.
Good one, mate.
Yeah, mate. I mean,
is that all right?
Mate can be used very sarcastically. I mean,
well, so don't tell me you can't call people mate either.
No, I think you can most of the time. Although it took me some years as a sort of expatriate bomb to get used to the idea of calling people mate.
Right.
But you know, I've been on a cricket field long enough to hear it used as a sledge as much as anything else. So
it's not usually a sledge though.
Normally it's a term of.
But if you don't know the person's name, how do you refer to them? Someone brings you something which you were needing, you don't know the name. I mean, you would say, or you would often say, just thanks, mate.
Yeah, I do. And I have that problem. It's funny, you're going to be talking about face recognition later. And my very first academic paper was on face recognition. It was, I recognize your face, but can't remember your name, was the title of the paper.
Mm.
I'm horrific with remembering people's names. And people will come up to me and, you know, look at me and sort of knowingly and smile. And I just haven't got a clue what they're called, and it can be sometimes only 3 or 4 minutes after they've given me their name and I just can't remember it, so then I just have to sort of keep talking to them and keep going, hoping they'll offer it, or they'll put on a name badge or something.
All right, Carmel, hello.
Oh, hello, Phil. I'm afraid I have to agree with your presenter tonight, Jim, in terms of the use of the word darl and love.
Yep. Where do you stand on this burning question, Carmel?
Well, as a person who's no longer in the workforce, who's retired,
yeah.
I've noticed that these are sort of terms, and there's a special tone of voice that people get when they're talking to elderly or older people.
Uh-huh.
And it's you poor sweet old thing, I'm going to demonstrate how kind I'm being to you by calling you darl and love.
No one would call their equal love or darl, you mean?
Not necessarily. Well, not necessarily. I mean, they may, but I think it's particularly sort of used with older people.
Yeah.
And there's a concept called situational language,
mm-hmm.
Where you apply language according to the situation you're in and the people that you're dealing with. And, you know, sometimes I get these terms, you know, thrown at me in the supermarket and whatever, and you try to look at the intent, and the intent being to be kind or whatever else. But there are times when I don't want kindness. I just want good service.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think sometimes people get a bit confused about why they're interacting with others. And it can be actually just a, you know, good prompt service and courtesy is all that's required in most situations.
Cut being my mate. <That's
right. laughs> Absolutely not. I don't like being called mate by men either.
Oh, okay. You don't like that either?
No. Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I mean, I just reflecting on that, I really purr with delight when people use my first name. So if they call me Jim, or if they know me really well, James.
Hmm.
And now then James, or if they use the lengthened version. And I really like that. There is an issue, I think, sometimes with talking to the elderly of sort of talking to them like children. So using sort of diminished terms, sort of sweetie or something like that, or doll or something, or using a deliberately old fashioned label, which sort of says that they are therefore old fashioned.
Okay. What about this one? Robbie says, what a humorless world we're developing. If people would be less reactive, we could all have a chuckle and relaxed. Where are we? I've lost it. Laurie's got a good story. Hello, Laurie.
Hi. I used to work in an open work group, and a lady came in one day with a complaint, and the gentleman who answered the desk said to her, "Oh, you'll need to see Sheila." Well, she went off the deep end. Except that the lady's name was Sheila.
Yes. Oh, so she heard you'll need to see a Sheila.
Yes.
Did he say we've got a few Sheilas here?
Well, you just couldn't get a word in, and the supervisor actually came out and said to her, "Hey, look,
what's this Sheila want?"
You know, and sometimes it is that easy to get misunderstood.
Yeah.
And it was just about the lady heard what she thought she heard, wasn't prepared to listen to, you know, the gentleman trying to correct it. But it's just so easy, I think, to sometimes hear what you think you hear, but not, it's not correct.
Yeah. Yep. Fair enough. Thank you. Yes. What about you guys, Jim? That's very common these days. In fact, young women call each other guys all the time.
I fell into the trap of that recently. I don't like using the term sort of as a collective noun for males and females.
Can you guys next Wednesday remember that you guys are loading the stuff? Remember, and those other guys are going to bring it over.
And I stopped myself, and I actually went into a worse trap. Mm. And I said guys and gals, and I suddenly sounded like Jimmy Savile. So I thought this was not good at all.
No, well, so gals probably not going to get you far.
No, it's not going to get me far either. But something. How do I get out? How do I try to dig myself out of a sexist sort of remark and make it even worse at the time? So guys, I don't know. I mean, language is dynamic, isn't it? And it changes. And again, do the people mind or not? But you should never presume that they won't mind. I think you sort of.
But it is a bit hard, isn't it? what are we going to say to a group of people who? I don't know all their names.
I come back to sort of,
you lot?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's will you lot pick up those things or not?
Yeah. I think it's almost.
What do you do?
Well, I suppose you try to avoid using any of those sorts of terms. You just say, sort of like Captain Mannering, sort of gather around or something. You just sort of, would you mind awfully picking this stuff up?
Robbie says, no wonder everyone's dying of loneliness.
But it comes back to trust and tolerance. And when I say tolerance, it's not just tolerating sort of neurotic behavior or those who are easily offended. Mm. Those people also need to be tolerant. So tolerance goes in both directions. And I think, you get to a point where if you are being tolerant and you are, in a sense, indulging in your view, another person's sort of peccadilloes and how they're addressed or what they find funny or not, after a while, it's time to have a bit of a conversation with those people about this. Mm. Because if they're being unreasonable, they need that feedback.
What about, my texter says, what about hey buddy? Bit American?
Yeah, I have no, and what's wrong with it being American? You see, that's a little anti-Americanism. But,
I rest my case.
Yeah, you see, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it, with this stuff? I personally don't have a problem with that. But you do, it's interesting, I had some American friends over at the conference and they were introduced. And there was a whole bunch of comments made which were just casually anti-American, assuming everyone in the room would find them amusing. And then they put on, I think the band played the Great American Songbook, and this guy just turned to me and said, well, at least our music's okay. And they were quite offended by these.
Tell him to suck it up.
Yeah.
Gary's on the road. G'day, Gary.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Not bad. What do you reckon?
I'm annoyed with the double standards and how quickly the females in the workplace jump to discrimination and sexual discrimination. Mm. An example being, I was in management for 3 years, and I had my own office, and I'd call out to an account manager, and she'd come in and I'd say, have a look at this. So she'd lean over, put her hand on my shoulder, look at the computer screen and say, yeah, babe, that's great. If I was to do that, inappropriate touching and inappropriate language, and I can be up for sexual discrimination.
Mm.
That is what annoys the crap out of me, is you get situations like that, and depending on who the judge is, who settles it out, who sorts it out, you can be in a world of pain, and it can seriously jeopardise any sort of work prospects or anything like that you've got. So you've got to be very, very careful.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I think that's right, Gary. I mean, yeah, thanks, mate. Mm. I think that's Gary's probably right, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it in theory, it cuts both ways. Mm. That, a female boss touching a male subordinate or what have you could easily be construed as sexual harassment in the right, because the context is everything. With these, and again, I think it comes down to familiarity and trust. I wouldn't be going in, putting my hands on the shoulders of any colleague or employee until, I was absolutely confident that was okay, and they were doing it first. I mean, I'm not the sort of touchy person anyway, but if I was, I'd want to see the lead. I'd want to be watching other people in the office. How do they interact with other people? Do they do this with other people? Is it only with you? And if it's only with you, that's a bit unusual. So I'd be looking at the situation first, analysing it and working out whether this behaviour is okay. I know that sounds very kind of forensic and analytical. Mm. And you think, let's just be ourselves. But, we've got lots of versions of ourselves and we can't just present the most uninhibited version of ourselves straight up until we know what we're dealing with.
Middle-aged white males use love and dial to females in restaurants to make themselves feel important, says my texter. Yeah, Kate the mate says, Phil, as an older Sheila, I hate being called darling or love, especially by younger people. It's condescending and shows a total lack of respect. Much prefer to be called by name or that quintessential Aussie title, mate. I call my good friends male and female mate. Yeah, what about blokes? Can you blokes in the yard there get that truck ready? Because otherwise these other blokes will have to do it.
The only person I found objecting to blokes was actually a male, and it was a male academic, and he found the term sort of uncouth and objected to it because it suggested that he was not this man of refinement.
Did you tell him where to go jump?
Internally, I did. Let me just say the power relationship was not conducive for me doing that.
Isn't bloke pretty neutral?
I thought it was. Yeah. I don't particularly have an issue. But again, you know, these terms get picked up on. Like the term lad came back into fashion in the 80s and 90s. The new lad became a thing.
But that was more an English thing, wasn't it? Wasn't really an Australian thing. I know what you're talking about, but lads were, that's right.
But that bloke thing, I think, had a similar kind of sort of renaissance.
That's probably right. Yeah.
So, again, generally speaking, I'm quite relaxed about those sort of things. But you you never know. Also, having said this, you've got to realise that you can be doing absolutely everything right and someone is just having a bad day or a bad life and they're just going to get offended. And it's that sort of Charles Laughton thing that it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to find something.
Alina, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Very well.
Well, I just wish to comment on the fact that I don't like being called hello, love, at my doctor's surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I attended a upmarket restaurant in Karoi a few months ago with the male friend, and we were greeted with, hi, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 69, he's 65, I'm vibrant, alive and whatever, but I'm not a male.
Yeah.
And so...
but these days, guys is gender neutral, isn't the way it's used. It's not... I mean, girls use it to describe to describe each other.
Girls may well do, and guys may well do, but I can tell you, from a woman's perspective...
Mm.
At 69, going out for dinner to be treated as, hi, you guys, was like, hello, do I look like a man?
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's fair enough.
I think there's a sort of ageism number going, but the whole thing was, the dinner was absolutely to die for. The service was... delivered by the same person who greeted us, and
so they were a great bunch of guys.
But the bottom line is, I went back a week later because I love the food, I love the environment and everything. And I said, I walked in and 3:30 in the afternoon and said, "Listen,
Alina, we've got to move on. But I get the point that you're making, which is that if it's not appreciated, don't do it. that's fair enough too. My texter says the male manager of my company calls my very well educated, highly experienced female colleagues the girls, which is demeaning and disrespectful. That's true too. That's fair enough.
Mm.
It's all look in the end. Is it? We've really got to finish this, Jim. Is it? It's really about respect, isn't it? Just be respectful.
It is. It's about tolerance and respect. Yeah, absolutely.
But be tolerant too.
Indeed.
Don't get too uptight.
Absolutely. Relax.
Thank you, James.
My pleasure, Philip.
Jim Bright, who's an organisational psychologist, has been our guest tonight. Thank you for the calls too and the spirit in which we took the topic.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.